Welcome, everybody. This is kind of a sort of an impromptu live stream. Well, that's not totally true. It's been in the works for probably a couple of days, but it wasn't until a couple of days ago that I decided I wanted to do this, have this conversation live, because frankly, I suck at just talking into a camera by myself unaccompanied. I feel like a fool, and it takes a half hour to get through, you know, one sentence because I'm just so self-conscious. So I figured the topic at hand tonight is AI art and how that impacts the arts, specifically the movies. And who better to talk with than not only a friend, a film critic, but also a fellow alum of the American Academy of Art here in Chicago, Mr. Jeff York of the EstablishingShot.org. Welcome, Jeff.
Great to be here, Ian, with you. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a fascinating discussion, I'm sure.
Yeah, I am too, because one of the reasons we're a couple minutes late is I was getting together a multimedia presentation, which I will be sharing after I take a sip of coffee. Pardon me. I lost my voice. wow, this is wrong. Okay. I was getting together a presentation. We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff tonight with regards to specifically the movie that inspired this conversation, Colin and Cameron Cairns, Late Night with the Devil, which came out last week. And it was one of the most highly anticipated horror films of the year, one of my most anticipated horror films of the year. And there was a lot of buzz around it. And then right before opening, it seemed, there was a weird backlash against the use of AI artwork in the movie. Now, I did a little bit of digging, and we'll get into the Variety article that kind of broke the story and has a quote from the Cairns on the issue. But it looks like this popped up on Reddit back in February. Someone said, hey, did anyone notice in this movie that they used AI artwork? And I think that led to a lot of speculation, like, oh my gosh, are they using actors as, you know, artificially generated actors? Was a script written by a chatbot? But no, it turns out there were, from what I understand, three interstitials, sort of like network placards, like you'd see all over the place in 1970s television, you know, we'll be right back, or station difficulties, or please stay tuned. Apparently, there was an earlier version of this AI art program that the Cairns implemented with their art department to come up with these interstitial cards. And if you didn't know that watching the movie, I don't think it stood out to me personally. Now, Jeff, you and I have both seen Late Night with the Devil. Knowing what you know now, and maybe this is unfair because I'm asking you to put yourself in a different mindset than the one you had, did anything stand out when you were watching, like, oh, that looks funnier? There's something weird about this I can't quite put my finger on.
Not at all. In fact, I thought they did a remarkable job of vamping the kind of interstitials that The Tonight Show used to do in between the commercials and sort of the, okay, we're coming back now, or we'll be right back kind of stuff. It looked like they've sort of riffed on those out the window. In fact, I kind of wondered when I looked at them if they maybe, if any place were inspired by, it might have been the Tonight Show, which famously had all kinds of art that they used for years on that show. And it seemed a little archaic even at the time when I was watching it in high school as a teenager. But I thought, wow, these guys did a really good job of just capturing the period right down to those Tonight Show-esque interstitials that they used in between the show segments on this fictional TV set in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was very authentic. I mean, I have a review of the movie coming out tomorrow with Pat McDonald. We talked about that and The Passion of the Christ in honor of Good Friday. So look forward to that. Yeah. But we did not talk about the AI issue. We mostly talked about the substance of the film. And yeah, tonight's not going to be a rehash of Late Night with the Devil, except to say that everyone should go see it. But
agreed.
Just talking about this issue. Now, Jeff, we did not do like a pre-interview where I said, so what do you think about AI? Are we on the same page? I'm not going to talk to you unless you agree with me. What are your thoughts on AI? It's a big question, but it's one that's kind of come to the forefront very recently. And I think Late Night with the Devil is the most recent example.
It is. And I have mixed feelings about AI, but mostly they are very worried feelings about AI. When I say I have mixed feelings about them, I think it's amazing how the technology has come so far so quick, and it can do a lot of things. I mean, there are companies and different places throughout the globe that are hawking the advantages of AI as far as saving time. They can crunch numbers. They can look for pictures that maybe would take you know, let's say an art director or a designer hours to look for on Google Images or some of those kind of places, where he can type in, I would like to see a picnic scene that is in the spring with yellow roses and a couple mountains in the background. And if they can't find it for him, they can at least show pictures that he could combine if he wanted to in his art direction, and they now can probably do it for him and put them together. He may finesse it a little bit in post Photoshop after he's gotten the image from AI. But those kind of things are, I think, are to be expected, and you would probably regard as inevitable advances, and probably good advances in many ways. Does it hurt art directors? Does it hurt art directors and production designers in Hollywood? Maybe, but you know, that's like saying, should we not have computer generated animation because we're putting cell artists out of work? If it's faster, if it's more economical, if it can tell and open up all kinds of worlds and create things that maybe couldn't have been done by human hands drawing it, I think that's part of progress. You know, you have to accept that somebody's going to build a better mousetrap, and these things are better mousetraps. However, I think in regards to AI, what I think mostly the talk and the buzz about using it for, and where it sort of got into this very, very negative place quickly, is the bad people who always come in and swoop in. And, you know, as soon as we had the internet, you had, various industries doing it, trying to con you out of things and sending you emails and making you think that it's some prince in the Middle East asking you for $20,000, then you'll guarantee you get $2 million in return, or, you know, naughty websites, or, you know, sending people pictures of, pictures that they probably shouldn't have. And then, of course, you know, for a while now, we've had fakes and celebrity fakes where they can put people together, and it looks like they're maybe starring, or, you know, posed in Playboy or starring in X-rated movies. Those kind of things have been coming, and the AI can do it really well. And it's really sad. The Taylor Swift stuff that came out a month or so ago was a terrible example of that. But that kind of stuff is out there. The scoundrels always find these new technologies and use them to their advantage. And then, of course, there's the deep fakes, you know, some of the video clips that everybody's seen now where people are talking and it sounds, oh, look, that's the president talking, and it's not. It's a fake that they've done with, you know, pretty sophisticated mouth movements and eye movements and vocal things. And they don't even have to take it. You know, the old days where you take, you know, an entire conversation that somebody would have and you put together the words very carefully. And now you don't have to do that. You and I could be having this conversation right now, and tomorrow somebody can make it sound like Joe Biden and Donald Trump are talking. And that's really scary. And of course, those are the things that I worry about them using it for, as well as what happened right after the SAG strike was settled. ChatGPT roamed into Hollywood and talked with almost all the studios about, like, how can we use ChatGPT to write things for us? Because we don't want to have this strike ever happen again. And next time we're going to be waiting for them. Oh, yeah. So, you know, those are the things that I think are very negative. Heard it. I think they're going to hold back some of the progress that AI can use for the medical field or other places where it can be implemented for good, because these negative things are getting a lot of the publicity. And just quickly to say, for the makers of Late Night with the Devil, it's such a terrific film. And for them to get any kind of weird, bad press for 3 to 5 interstitials that they used in 2022 when they made this, far before this all became a humongous issue where people were starting to worry about it, and the ChatGPT guy stands in front of the Senate committee last year and goes, hey, you guys better fix this, because I, as Dr. Frankenstein, who created this, let the creature get out, and he's marauding all over the village. I can't control it, so maybe you and the pitchfork crowd can chase him down for me, because, sorry, I screwed up. So I can't blame these filmmakers for that. And for art cards, I mean, it's not like they're recreating actors or anything that's taking really bread and butter away from somebody. To take bread and butter away from a couple artists, maybe. But they were on a really tight budget, so I'm not saying you can excuse all this away easily. There's some arguments to be made against using any kind of thing that doesn't allow an artist to create work, and you and I are both that. So I wouldn't like it if somebody said, well, we don't need Jeff to draw this. We'll just use this, and it'll be good enough or whatever. But that shouldn't be the focus of this movie, and I think that is a very, very small, low-hanging, dumb piece of fruit to be grabbing at when there are much bigger issues that AI brings to the forefront that is going to impact the world, and maybe for very tragic ends if it seems that people start implementing what it's capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, the internet is a great, you know, example, but I mean, you can look at the advent of the printing press, the automobile, television, yep. the movies,
right,
talkies.
Exactly. You're always going to put somebody out of work or make it harder for them to make a living.
But not necessarily. It's hard because at the dawn of any of these great inventions, there's always a lot of hand wringing, a lot of fear, right. skepticism, name calling, but what it does usually is it ends up further democratizing art and making it more accessible to people and right. allowing them to do more things. It seems like right now that because AI in a very, not even a very primitive sense, I mean, we've come a long way since even a year ago as far as what's possible. I mean, now you've got Sora, which can make short films in right. AI, or at least help people to, you know, fully realize their visions without spending $250,000. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the phrase that keeps coming back to me is it's a tool. I've seen the backlash against Late Night with the Devil, and I've, you know, scrolled film Twitter. There's lots of comments like, oh, I'm so heartbroken they used AI, or how could they, or we shouldn't support the movie because of this, or I had a hard time watching it because I knew there was AI in the movie. I'm like, these are not the words of creative people.
Right.
They're the words of people who listen to scared creative people and like to hop on the doomerism bandwagon. As recently, I was a big AI skeptic until a couple of things happened. One, I actually judged a short film contest for IIT Madras. My friend Shashwat Mukherjee, who I do the Spotlight India series with, invited me to be part of that competition. Mm-hmm. And some of the films were shot traditionally. I think the students had 48 or 72 hours to make a short film, which is a large ask. And there were some traditional filmmaking techniques used. And then there was a lot of AI. Now, that was kind of ruffled my feathers at first, because I'm like, isn't that cheating? And how does that work? How do you tell a story using AI images? And what I found was there was a full range. And these are, college students, right? They're Zoomers, I guess. So they've got not as many qualms with the new technology because they're on the forefront. But I saw everything from, wow, this is really kind of choppy and amateurish, to this is a really cool animatic for a short film that you might shoot digitally or with film and with, actual actors, to, wow, this is probably 2 to 3 passes away from being an actual, quote unquote, actual, like, moving short film, because it's not just what they can generate, it's how they tell the story with music, mood, atmosphere, selective editing, motifs and stuff. Some of these folks really got it, and it was kind of eye-opening to me. The second thing that happened was I actually started using AI, experimenting with it. I've got the Adobe Creative Suite, and now it comes with Firefly, which is their AI toolkit. And I had heard like, oh, you type in a prompt and it spits out an image. It will, but there is an art to it. There is an art to properly wording your prompt, getting more elaborate, because it allows like several thousand characters. So you could write a paragraph and get as detailed as you want, and it'll give you like 4 examples. And what you can do as an artist is keep going until it gets it absolutely right, which it won't. You can save some of those images and try other, like Bing has an AI, like everybody's got like AI art services now. And so you can go to different ones, type in similar prompts and get similar results, and take those images into Photoshop and then combine them into something that you might want to see, and to finesse things. And to folks who say, well, that's still cheating, I would ask, and this is kind of Photoshop artist speak, but when you open up a Photoshop file and you do a digital painting, are you painting? Are you using a brush? Are you using colors? No, you are using a suite of ones and zeros. Michelangelo didn't have the ability to go, I want a size 500 brush that I can completely color my canvas in one brush stroke. No, he had labor over it for hours going like this, whereas we can use the paint dropper tool, the bucket, and go, boom. And we save 5 hours of work, we do it in 2 seconds. But also digital artwork, that was another thing. I remember, you know, 20 years ago when digital painting really kind of took off in a prosumer kind of sense, they're like, well, you know, it's never really going to match traditional classic oil painting. Now you can see people, you know, I'm part of like Facebook art groups that, you know, do digital paintings, and they look just as good as any traditional, you know, classical oil painting because they were drawn in that style. And I would say that aside from the alchemy of trying to mix your paints and get everything right and using turpentine or whatever, it's still just as hard a discipline, because you can't just say, okay, here's Photoshop, paint me the Mona Lisa. You have to know the techniques and you have to understand, you know, art history to some degree to really get the technique down. I would also say that in terms of filmmaking, which is the heart of this matter, I mean, when you watch a movie now and it's like they're telling a modern story, but then they flash back to the 20s and everything goes sepia tone and there's scratches on it. Do you think that the filmmakers went out and rented an old camera and got old film? No, they ran it through After Effects, and there is a filter you can put on it that has sepia tones and scratches and pops and everything you can imagine. So, yes, AI can do a lot of that stuff more instantly, but it is still just a tool. And in a sense, we've been using AI, although we haven't really been calling it that, for years. You know, it's not artificial intelligence, but it's not, you know, handmade, you know, bespoke artwork. It's all tools.
I think you're exactly right. And I think where it gets tricky, and this is maybe where there are the need for some calm and maybe even legitimate arguments of nuance or subtleties in definition are required. But I think more often than not, the bad use of it is where you know it is being done with a certain amount of deception and or in places that really it needs a little bit more of a, for lack of a better term, human touch. I'll give you a couple examples. I totally agree with you. I mean, could they have created the witch's castle in 1939 for Dorothy and her friends to be chased around by the witch's guards? Yes. And it would have cost $500 million even then. Could they do it with a mat shot that made it look like they were being trapped between those two entryways from the main part of the castle? Hell yeah, it looked incredible. Still looks pretty damn good today. I can't believe it. That was a matte painting. It's the same as CGI as today, or those Rembrandt illustration things that you're talking about today, and we can do those things. In some of the places where it's not as good to do or not as easy, I think Bob Zemeckis has struggled for 20 years now to properly make humans look human in his animated stuff, whether it's the Polar Express or whatever. I remember when Final Fantasy came out over 20 years ago, one of the most popular video games back then, and the hair was more animated than the eyes of the main character. And the critics all said that, and it kind of bombed because it just didn't look right. And then they investigated why it didn't look right, and they found that there are some, I don't know, it was some crazy number, like well over 200 different nuances in the way eyes move that most of us probably can't tell, even if we're looking at it on a screen that's, you know, 50 feet tall at the IMAX or whatever the heck it is. But that's how it works. I mean, when somebody is sitting in a picture still on camera in film versus a still photo of them, you can tell the difference. Now, that's what the naked eye can see. But the subtleties of what really goes on with eyes, the way they flicker, the way they move just a little bit, the way the wetness moves or increases, very, very difficult to create in animation, and still is difficult. They do a better job of it. I would argue that maybe Avatar is the best example of making these kinds of human people look as close to real as you can. However, I would also argue that James Cameron has an advantage by not having to make them look like humans. I have yet to see a human look as good as a human does, because they don't, even with knowledge of having to make these, you know, 300 plus different movements just to make eyes believable. It's still a little tricky with human beings, and maybe in 5 years I will be saying, wow, they did it as well as Cameron did with the Avatar characters.
Well, I would say that the exception, and it's a little bit different because it's not completely CGI. It involves like motion capture and mapping of things. But you look at what Fincher did in The Social Network with Armie Hammer to create the Winklevoss twins. Oh, yes, twin.
That's right.
And this is before anybody knew who the hell or what an Armie Hammer was. And they're like, oh, my God, who are those amazing twins that were in this movie? Right, like, no, that's right. One guy.
It was amazing, yeah. And so those kind of things, I think you can't be negative about. Now, did that arguably take a role away from an actor who could have done it? No, they probably would have done it. I mean, you know, they would have done it split screen like they did the Martin Landau twins in the episode of Columbo back in 73, you know, where you get somebody who doesn't really look like him standing for the shots where he's, you know, just back to the camera. I think where AI gets dangerous, and this is where I think some of these people are a little on the snowflakey, panicky side, is I don't think you should hold a couple of interstitials in this movie, which is generally so well thought out and clever and well acted, as a problem. I think if you're using it to write, and you're doing it because you don't want to pay writers or you want to control the product because you don't really want to actually have to trust somebody, those are issues. If you're using them to create videos that are going to hurt people or putting people's faces on naughty pictures and things like that, these are bad things. Are you replacing artists or art directors potentially? Maybe, yeah. And we'll see, to your point, how the market works with that. I think at this juncture, you still need art directors and creative directors, whether they're in advertising or filmmaking or journalism, whatever, to finesse things. Because a lot of times when it comes out from AI, it still isn't right. The eyes aren't right. Some of the features are wrong. I think it was 2 years ago, they did this early AI thing, which is also the same time these guys are making this film. So, hey, we are all doing it. And it said you could put in like 10 pictures of yourself and they would create a science fiction version of you or a propaganda poster of you from the 30s or, you know, a romantic book cover of you or a comic book hero. I did them. I posted on Instagram and I'm an artist and a writer. But it was like, wow, that's pretty cool that they could do that. And I didn't think that was taking anybody's job away. It was just kind of a fun little tool. But if they're going to use it to hurt political campaigns or Taylor Swift's of the world or your high school girlfriend who you broke up with and you want to get revenge on, so you suddenly make all these X-rated videos or with her face put on a porn star, these are terrible, awful uses AI, and they will be used by them, the scoundrels out there, as they've always gotten a hold of a lot of the new technology and stuff. If studios are thinking that they're going to hire writers or fire writers so they can use ChatGPT to come up with stuff, that's going to be a shame. And I think that's wrong. And there is a, you know, for lack of a better expression, of a depth or nuance to somebody's life history and experience that you can't get just from imitating other good writing out there. And that's really at this point what most of the AI is, until they learn to feel a little bit more. I mean, they can represent somebody else's feelings or turn a phrase, but you're still probably going to need some you know, finessing of it, because I don't think they can feel it. And also there's the kind of experimentation of working and trying and failing sometimes with writing, with drawing, with other things that they maybe can't get or can't appreciate. Hence, they come out with sometimes these funky looking sentences or pictures. But well, my worry is, you know, are we using it for good purposes or are we using it for evil, for cheapness, revenge, lying, getting people to be conned? These are the things where I think Dr. Frankenstein, when he talked to the Senate committee last summer, was accurate about this is the place where it could go and quickly unravel a lot of society and also ruin the reputation of this effective tool.
There's a lot there.
Sorry.
No, because I mean, you're touching on pretty much everything I wanted to talk about tonight. And no, this is
good.
To
preempt anything.
No, the only thing you preempted me on was talking about like some of the, I have a slideshow that we're going to talk about.
Oh yes, I love it.
Like Polar Express and Avatar, that's all in there, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But no, I mean,
I would have said those even if I didn't know you did this in the show, because I think those are perfect examples of like where there's some mistakes or where there's some expertise, et cetera, et cetera. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. Right. Well, I think, you know, as far as is it going to be used for good or evil, it's like anything that mankind creates, it's going to be used for both. You know, we use science to cure, you know, to look for cures for diseases and potentially blow up the world. What regulates us is, you know, people's talents, people's consciences. I mean,
that's
if you want, you look back to the Kennedy assassination and, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald, there was the, I'm only going off of what Oliver Stone told me in his movie. But there was that whole thing of the famous black and white picture of Oswald with the rifle, and they different photographs and pasted them together. It was a lot easier to do because it was like just a black and white, you know, photo, and you
cut
the razor and you make this composite. So that's fake news as well. What I, the only pushback I have for you on some of these points is that to the extent that we could be manipulated politically, or that we could, that writers could have their jobs taken away in Hollywood, is we, and when I say we, I'm talking about the collective they, because I'm not in those systems, opened the door. Because if you look at what's happened in the last 5 years of politics or more, and the last 5 years of movies, certainly, movie studios are collapsing because the product that they're putting out might as well have been written by a computer. Robert Meyer Burnett on his podcast talks about this all the time in the context of Star Trek. You know, classic Star Trek was written by science fiction novelists, big thinkers, you know, scholars of literature who oftentimes fought in wars and were writing a hopeful vision of the future that was based on their life experiences. Whereas people who are writing a lot of modern Trek and a lot of modern television grew up watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and they never go outside unless it's to like a furry convention or something. They don't have, to your point, like the experience to write adults as adults and to like explore big ideas and certain things are off limits and all that stuff. There's no bravery anymore. So, and if you look at, you know, politics, you know, how often are we looking at stories where somebody said something and it turns out, well, yeah, they said something terrible unless you play the next 5 seconds of the press of the clip,
context.
Right? And by the time, you know, it's like the Mark Twain thing, the lie gets halfway around the world before the truth pulls its pants on.
Right,
it's boots. I don't know why I went to pants, but
it's okay. even so, it's they're not ready to go out. The bottom's not taken care of.
But so that's the point. Like, I don't see how anybody can stand up and say, you can't do this to us when we've been doing it to ourselves gradually. This is just the accelerant. I think I don't want to see anybody lose their jobs, lose their livelihoods, lose their lives either. But to the extent that we as a species, as a collection of cultures, is going to make it through this next creative revolution, because it's a creative revolution, a political one, certainly, it's going to be because we're going to rise above and be better than it. Yeah, it's going to lead to some terrible catastrophes, I'm sure. But, you know, we're still here. We're still alive and kicking. We've been through everything that everybody has always said. This change is going to lead to the brain rot,
the fall of the Roman Empire.
Right. Well, that actually did fall, but...
Well, the fall of the Roman Empire too, maybe, or alike, something of that ilk.
Because everybody loves a sequel, right? That's what we've learned from Hollywood. I mean, you can't tell me that Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a shining example of why we don't need ChatGPT.
Right, right. I'll take it one step further for you. And I wrote about this in an article I did a couple months back for PipelineArtists.com. It was called Could an AI-Generated Cary Grant Win an Oscar? And my argument in there is yes. Because, and here's how it happens. Some studio head, maybe he has an affection for Turner Classic Movies, and goes, you know, they don't make romantic leads like Cary Grant anymore. Or maybe he looks at the products and goes, you know, the reason they don't go to these romantic comedies is, other than Tom Hanks, who's now a grandfather, there's no young men who are out there, blah, 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 blah. So somebody says, well, you know what? We had Fred Astaire dancing with a vacuum cleaner 20 years ago on the Super Bowl, and we can create all these other characters now. Why don't we just take the reams of Cary Grant photos we have and video of him and film history and all that. And we'll just create him anew. And if we have the script that we want to cast him in, we'll create this character and maybe bring back Irene Dunne too, or Katharine Hepburn or somebody else. Or maybe we put him with Meg Ryan or some new star to see how that'll work. And, you know, it becomes a new version of Roger Rabbit where you've got live action with the animation, and we'll make it work. And it'll be fun to see Cary Grant. And won't that be novel? Everybody will want to see it, and they'll say, oh my God, it's so cool that you can bring some of these classic stars back. And the key component there that I argued in the article, and I think where the studio heads maybe are smart or shrewd, or at least evilly smart and shrewd, is the audience will love it. The audience already does. They don't give a shit about some of these problems that we have. Now, on a certain level, they may, and on a certain level, if it comes a bigger problem for them, if for some reason, you know, like you said, Frozen Empire becomes the norm of how bad movies are and people don't want to see crappy stuff. I mean, we're finding out now in all these kinds of interviews and sort of surveys that one of the things that's getting to Gen Z is they've seen everything too much, and it's all reboots and sequels, and they're like, please give us fresh material. And, you know, I think that's the opportunity to go to some books that haven't been turned into films or TV, or create new things and make your own star character, you know, somebody who's new. I mean, John Wick came out of nowhere, and he's on his fifth movie coming up with The Ballerina. But if you had followed the old path, you'd say, well, we can't do anything other than Dirty Harry, because Dirty Harry is out there and everybody knows who he is, and they've known who he is for 50 years. Let's do another Dirty Harry. Oh, we'll do Dirty Harry's nephew, because Clint Eastwood's too old, and maybe we'll get Clint Eastwood's kid for it. But somebody said, you know what, let's do John Wick. It's a new thing. Oh, it was big, and now we have sequels and umpteen iterations of that. But I think the fact is, If they can do some things that there may be interest in or the ability to do it, they will try to do it. The audience will be the great determiner of it, as you said, sort of in a democratic system. And they may reject it. Maybe they'll say, well, that's terrible that they did that with Cary Grant, but maybe not. If it's done well, maybe they'll think that was kind of fun. Now, is that going to be done all the time? Are they going to start putting, you know, Humphrey Bogart with Jenna Ortega? Let's hope not. But I think that kind of stuff is coming. And I think it will be shocking, and maybe it'll be clever, and we'll see how people react to it. But I'm not so sure that the audiences would be as high horse oriented as I think artists may be. Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, like, if you were to bring back Cary Grant, the people who are going to pitch a fit about it, A, they're going to watch it because they're curious. They might not pay for it. They might wait for it to come to Amazon or Max or something, right? But the, you know, there are going to be enough people curious to go see it on the big screen and see if it holds together as a movie. Mm-hmm. But if they do it right, like, yeah, if you get Cary Grant, like a young Cary Grant and Jenna Ortega in a romantic comedy, so it's not like he's playing the grandfather character, but like when he's in his 20s and she's in her 20s, and it's colorized, or maybe even a black and white kind of movie like The Artist or something, and you make it relatable to Gen Z or whoever the audience is, Gen Alpha, I guess, by the time they come out with it, you could have an entire new generation of people saying, oh my God, I love this new Cary Grant guy. You know, where does he live? He lives on a hard drive because he's been dead for 60 years.
That's right.
but it's that kind of idea of, yeah, it's, there are a lot of legal, moral, ethical questions. You know, his estate would have to sign off on it, and cosmically, what right do they have? I mean, if he signed anything like that saying, well, my grandkids have the right to sign away, you know, whatever future commercial rights, could they have imagined the idea of an AI Cary Grant acting in a movie, you know, when he was signing those papers 60 years ago? I'm throwing out a lot of hypotheticals here, but yeah, the point is we just don't know, but the avenues are there. What scares me is I was listening to some podcast like a month ago before any of this kind of stirred up, but the idea of AI, you know, being able to generate your own sequels. Like, what if you hated, you know, the way that Die Hard 3 ended, and you could take Die Hard 3 and then cut it at a certain point and then enter prompts into ChatGPT and say, you know, I wish Jeremy Irons had lived, you know, or something like that. Right. And then you've got Die Hard 3, the Ian Simmons edition. And then there's 1,000 versions of Die Hard with a Vengeance floating around out there. So no one even remembers what the real one was anymore. Now, that sounds creepy and awful, but there is precedent for it. George Lucas has not allowed the original versions of his Star Wars movies to be out there. It's all the special editions or nothing. Mm-hmm. So again,
or for that matter, Ian, how about video games where you determine the ending, or Clue 40 years ago when they gave, I think, 6 endings that could play there, or even recently the Netflix Banda Shooter or something that was called, where they had you determining the plot throughout the Netflix movie being played.
They did that with a romantic comedy. Yeah.
Yeah. But there was also one that was about a guy creating a game where you would change, like, do you go into this room or do you do this? And then you go in this room, something bad happens. You go over here, you get the prize or whatever. They did that in the Netflix movie. I want to say Banda Snoot or something like that. It was a crazy word like that. But it was very popular, even won the Emmy that year for best TV movie. So I think the audiences out there aren't going to, you know, hem and haw over some of these things that are new. And I'd also like to take one other step forward, and I don't know if you were going here, Ian, so maybe I'm just clairvoyant, or we're so in sync with each other as friends that we can read each other's minds, and complete each other's sentences. But
so that's the AI, Jeff.
That it is. There you go. It's somehow in my head already. But I also think that we are looking at AI as a little bit limited in the sense that we're looking at it as like writing and images and all these things on the screen. What about AI creating characters like Ava from Ex Machina? How long is it before that comes down the pike? And then suddenly we have, people doing work like that or doing certain jobs. I mean, we already have machines in the Detroit automakers line and have for 50 years. But I mean, are we going to get to the point where AI can make a really savvy robot that in 20 years can be somebody who, or 10 years can be a babysitter, a friend, the Johnny Cab from Total Recall? I mean, those are the real implications of this technology and its leaps and bounds, not sitting there as home entertainment on a screen. I mean, that's some problems, and grant you, especially in political campaigns where they might make you think that the president said we were launching the nuclear missiles towards Russia and they believe it or something crazy like that. But what about the other uses of AI as we keep advancing that'll be part of our lives and people sitting next to you or driving the bus or, even becoming someone you can date. I mean,
right. Well, that, I mean,
that's what the whole story of Ex Machina was like. Can she pass as a real person? And Domhnall Gleeson's character falls in love with a robot.
It's not 20 years away, Jeff. It's here. There were stories a couple of months ago about how there are, I think it was OnlyFans, but there are like OnlyFans creators out there who are using AI generated women to collect money, and it's a dude running the account, hey, show me your feet or other things, and like
show you whatever it wants, and maybe stuff that people wouldn't be willing to do, or who knows what. Yeah, it's all kinds of possibilities, or dangerous possibilities at that.
And and the technology, or they've got sex robots and all this other stuff, things that are supposedly like more realistic. So you combine the flesh-like silicone and the warm gooey bits with the ability to hold a realistic conversation, and maybe not even one that you have to program. Like I have a personality type. I'd like, this type of girlfriend or this type of boyfriend or this type of they, them or whatever. And you can have that in your home. I mean, you look at I never saw it, but I understand the premise of it. But the Ryan Gosling movie, Lars and the Real Girl,
right?
This idea of, or her with Joaquin Phoenix, and
where he's falling in love with the voice, and she's as much a presence, non-physically, but she's there and she's talking to him and thinking for herself and everything else. Exactly.
I think it's not really a problem, but I can understand the advent of AI because pop culturally, and probably even culturally, we've been sort of slyly asking for it by what we're voting with in terms of, the entertainment we want to watch. We go from, I think, I don't know if I've told you the story, but I met Stan Winston, the legendary special effects maestro, back in a Comic-Con like 20 years ago.
Wow.
And he was just at a toy booth because he had like a line of action figures, and it was kind of dead. So I went and I talked to him, and he was so cool and so nice. I said, so what are you doing lately? And he said, I think it was like working with MIT or something on an artificial intelligence program. Interesting. I was like, cool. And I walked away thinking, do you remember that little movie you worked on with James Cameron, right? Called The Terminator.
Yeah, what that's right. He created the robotic character for that. And, the dun, 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 dun with the red eye and everything.
Right. But we've gone from artificial intelligence is going to blow up the world and it's going to be the end of us all to, hey, maybe I can date this thing, or, maybe it can make a movie for me. I think people we're kind of at the point where we've got everything at our fingertips. It feels like there are no frontiers anymore. So maybe this is the next frontier for good, or bad. Because again, as someone who's experimented with AI, it's fun, it's cool, it's weird, it doesn't always work, but you can see the evolution almost happening in real time. When you play with Adobe Firefly, they ask you when you create a suite of images, they say, hey, would you like to contribute this to our, image bank or something, or basically like help us refine our search results. Like if you think this was a good representation of what you put in, we'd like to recognize that and help other artists, with these kind of prompts or whatever. I don't know. I'm kind of neutral on it, but I'm not nearly as skeptical of it as I was before. There is sort of that level of fear, of course, because of the reasons we talked about. In fact, I want to bring up something right now. This is where I'm getting all fancy schmancy and hopefully it works. But okay, so I found this guy on Twitter named Barcy. Now you can see my Twitter right here, or mm-hmm. X. Yep. Okay. I haven't tried this test with sound yet, but we have former President Barack Obama right here. Well, let me know if you can hear this.
Some people are losing their minds because the video below.
You can hear that?
Yep.
Is it blowing out your speakers?
Okay. No, I think it just froze though, or stalled.
I paused it. I paused.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah, I can hear it.
I just want to make sure you can hear it. So, okay, I'll start over from the top.
Well, the audience can too.
Yeah.
Some people are losing their minds because the video below would be AI generated. I'm also a deep fake, and you should take care when you watch a video on the internet. See you soon. Some people are losing their mind.
Yeah. And they did the same thing with podcast host Lex Fridman.
This video was entirely generated by the deep fake model of Argil AI. It allows you to generate videos of yourself in any language in less than 2 minutes. You can also translate your production at the speed of light and distribute your content worldwide.
Yeah. So that's where we're at, Jeff.
There you go. Well, I'm going to throw out one other thought that this is where we're very bad as far as progressiveness in our world, and it's across the planet. And I think maybe this is the great challenge that goes with that. And that is, what can we do to avoid the Dr. Frankenstein problem? And I'm not suggesting that we create an AI Interpol, but maybe we do. And I think we have to look at how we now police some of things, because, for example, if they can create that and your voice can be translated into things, who's to say that they can't do that with you and me, and we could get in trouble for that, or who knows what, fake arrests, all these kind of things, let alone us saying stuff that somebody believes in. You lose a job over it, or your spouse over it, or your girlfriend in high school suddenly, goes around the world as the next Ginger Lynn or something like that. It's just that kind of stuff has to be protected. And what are we doing about it? I don't hear much talk about that. I hear all the talk about how fantastic this is. And I know businesses are doing all kinds of TED Talks and forums about it and conventions, and it's here, and here's how we're going to use it, and it's going to be great. Wonderful. All those are positive in many respects. Time-saving, clever, opening up different opportunities, create special effects. We don't have to spend all the time like some of the things that were also in that package of the Twitter feed, where he's showing how you can do stop motion very quickly now, which would normally take hours to do. You think about, what can we do to increase production and not have to spend as much money and not necessarily put people out of work, though, again, to your point about, you know, the free market and stuff. But we can do things that save time and problems and maybe free up us to think better and hopefully come up with better scripts than Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Maybe that's where the benefit is. We don't have to worry about producing this. We have to worry about thinking of whether it's good or not as a script before we produce it and make those special effects. But my worry is just, what are we doing to safeguard people? Because if we don't do that, I think that's where it gets very, very hairy.
Yeah. I mean, and I think this is kind of a new thought, so I'm kind of working it out in my head here. So I might say something dumb, but I think that's sort of where the responsibility is going to fall back onto people. And we're going to have mm-hmm. to use critical thinking skills and reason, yes. which are skills that have frankly atrophied in the mm-hmm. West mm-hmm. over the last, you know, 20 years with the advent of the internet. And, you know, people don't need to they don't need to read books anymore. They can, you know, click on a
I don't have to read it to write a report on it. I could just copy the Wikipedia page for my term paper.
Right. So if you read a headline that says, you know, Donald Trump or Joe Biden said X, like, wow, that sounds really crazy. You know, it's up to you to dig into it and see, you know, read the full story, or even if it is a full story, try and figure out if there's any signs that it's fake, or just say, does this make any sense? Does this sound like it's propaganda? Does this sound like it has an angle? But we're there right now with news media. So
right.
it might get really scary. Heaven forbid it causes people to turn off the internet or mm-hmm. or stop, you know, consuming media that way. I don't know what the solution is, but I mean, we are going to have to find a way through it. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you said something a second ago that got me thinking about there's another video in that Twitter feed from Barcy, which I'm going to link down below so people can see. It's like the 9 revolutions in AI this week or something like that. But one of them is like a 3D walkthrough of a space that's going to be turned into a building. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they have like the wireframe of the walls and the studs and the pipes and everything. But then also kind of like underlaid over that is a, you know, a photo realistic walkthrough of what it's going to look like. And I think, you know, in light of what happened in Baltimore yesterday with the bridge collapse, mm-hmm. I mean, there is a major shipping lane and transport bridge route that I'm messing up my terminology that is no more and that has to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Now that is going to take a long time, no matter how you slice it, but can you imagine using the technological tools at hand yes. to map that all out and make
and
sure
prevent that
sound. And maybe even innovate.
Almost like Minority Report, where you can anticipate a problem when this bridge is going to collapse or when this thing is obsolete because of whatever protocols, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a great use of AI. Those kind of things are great uses of technology. It's the nefarious stuff that I don't know if we are ready to quite understand how quickly that comes with it and or what we do about that.
Yeah, and in a sense, this controversy over Late Night with the Devil, I think, is kind of troubling as it is to us because we're like, come on, guys, it's just a couple of title cards.
Right.
It is. It's maybe it's the seeds of that AI Interpol that you're talking about, people speaking up and, you know, hopefully future examples will be a bit more something that people can get behind and not just like this weird muling, but like saying, hey, this something's not right here. Or this is a movie that claims to, you know, I don't know that they made any claims about not using AI, but we noticed mm-hmm. this, like what's going on here? It's the start of a conversation. Mm-hmm. But I do want to go back to another tab for a second.
Sure.
Because one thing we didn't do is actually look at what the Cairns brothers said mm-hmm. With regards to Late Night with the Devil. So from the Variety article from last week, a week ago today, actually, Late Night with the Devil directors explain using AI art in the film, say they experimented with 3 images only. So I don't know if they've explicitly called out which images they are, but I think if you've seen the movie, you can probably guess. And we'll actually look at one of them in a second. But the statement says, in conjunction with our amazing graphics and production design team, all of whom worked tirelessly to give this film the 70s aesthetic we had always imagined, we experimented with AI for 3 still images, which we edited further and ultimately appear as very brief interstitials in the film. We feel incredibly fortunate to have had such a talented and passionate cast, crew and producing team to go above and beyond to help bring this film to life. We can't wait for everyone to see it for themselves this weekend. Now, this was, you know, last weekend, the opening weekend, of course. But, you know, a couple of things here. In conjunction with our amazing graphics and production design team, it's not the directors, the producers saying, you know, sitting behind a desk and say, oh, we need a graphics card, or we need an art card for this news break. Yeah, just type something up for me, Colin. And they do it. No, they worked with their creatives to come up with something. And it also says, which we edited further and ultimately appear as very brief interstitials in the film, which goes back to what I was talking about earlier and what we're talking about. Tools, you take the images that you get from AI. I don't know what this looked like. It'd be kind of interesting to see if anyone has like an evolution of what those title cards look like. But yeah, there's still some creative input. You know, there's some know-how put into editing these things to make them presentable. I just wanted to share that because that's the kind of the context of what this whole conversation started out as.
No, it's interesting.
Almost an hour in.
Well, but it's fascinating, Ian, and you're right. People did figure this out and found it rather quickly. And I think it's a very small part of the film. It's unfair that they're having to battle all this kind of press when they've got such a terrific movie that we should be talking about, because that's where the discussion should be. However, it is interesting, you know, whether it's people or maybe people rising up to sort of help make some laws. And I'm not saying that we have to flood the courts and flood the, you know, judiciary with all kinds of new laws and stuff like that, but it might not be the worst idea to look at in this new world, just as the studios were forced to look at, hey, there's streaming now. We don't have the reruns the way they used to. And we've been kind of getting away with this for a decade. So I think the writers do have a point when they say, hey, you know, they're not going to be rerunning shows anymore, but if it's streaming and it gets, you know, 10,000 hits every 2 days, I should get something for that the same way I would if it ran in perpetuity and reruns, like, you know, some of the old shows. I mean, the people who made Seinfeld, those 4 actors making plenty of money, better money every week than most, probably 90% of the actors in Hollywood who are struggling to work and find work because of the residuals. But if you don't have the residuals based on shows like that appearing on local television, then they need to be compensated in other ways. And I think that means hits, it means likes, it means streaming, et cetera, et cetera. That's just modernity. And the studios were wrong to protest against that, even though it was going to cost them money because they'd saved all this money for 10 years of not having to do it. And it's just part of the progress. If they think that they don't have to have as many art directors or production designers because CGI and AI can do these things, that's progress too. So I think in some respects, everybody has to recognize that. But I will say this, it will be interesting to see if in the next 5 to 10 years, do we come up with something like, a sort of an AI identity theft laws that Ooh. Are done specifically. That's a friend of mine at work who came up with that, though I'm sure people have said that elsewhere. But I mean, I love the idea of AI identity theft laws that prevent these things from happening. And I'll just give you a quick example. And I think maybe you and I talked about this once at breakfast, but it's a sad story. And I think it suggests other things that can be done like this that will affect many more people in a similar kind of way. And that is probably almost a decade ago now, there was that famous dump of all these celebrity nudes on Reddit. And they were trying to find out who found literally like it was 250 actresses. And this was at the time Jennifer Lawrence was a big deal in some very private photos that were taken by her and her boyfriend, Nicholas Hoult, at the time in exchange when they were on shoots away from each other. And, you know, people send sexts and texts and all these kind of things. And it was made public. And they investigated it. And the first thought they had, and when they were kind of trying to figure out where it came from, it had to be some tech genius, right? Somebody who could find all this and get it and hack it and throw it out there right away. So they looked at Apple and all the tech industries. Turns out it's just some normal schmuck who would come home every night. And after dinner, if he wasn't watching TV, he was on the internet going on to, you know, Gmails and other platforms or, you know, text things, trying to figure out what celebrity passwords were. So he's putting in J-Law 1, J-Law 2, J-Law whatever her birthday was, and seeing if it came up. And through trial and error, it did. And over the course of a year or so, he was able to find all these actresses. Not all of them had dirty photos or illicit kind of stuff like that, but plenty did. He stored them, and then he was going to sell them, and he dumped them on Reddit, and it went everywhere and it caused great embarrassment for all these actresses. Now, here's the thing why I bring this up for the identity theft. He was ultimately caught. God love it. You know, the federal did a great job of finding, you know, people to figure out who it was. He was arrested, and I think he was fined like $250,000, and I think sentenced like 6 or 7 years in jail. He's out now, and he's moving on with his life. I mean, I don't know anything about him, but I know that the sentence is done. Meanwhile, those pictures of Jennifer Lawrence and all those other celebrities live in perpetuity. There's no way to get them back. Somebody finds them somewhere else. They send them to this friend. It ends up on this website. You can't even go back to the original source, like it's patient 10 or 0 or whatever, like that kind of stuff. But that's the kind of stuff where can we come up with an app? Can we come up with some sort of malware or software or protection or laws or whatever that makes that kind of stuff? If you do this, it's a crime. If you lie on television or online with visuals well, or anything like that, well, that, but I'm saying it's part of that too. We don't do anything about that. The thousands and thousands of lies that permeate and create fake news, not just in you know, the news world, but, you know, people putting stuff, awful stuff on social media, and they have no responsibility for it. Like, well, I'm not a reporter. Well, if they're looking at your feed on Facebook, Alex Jones, because you're telling them that's the news, even though you say, I'm not a journalist. Yeah, you are in that capacity. That's the new version of journalism. So I think we need some new version of laws, some new version of, you know,
well, I mean,
sort of watching this stuff and all that.
In fairness, what you're saying, Alex Jones was, you know, there was a whole trial. He had to pay an ungodly amount of money to those families and apologize and all that. So we do have a system in place. I understand where you're coming from, but I am uncomfortable with, I agree with AI identity theft protection. I think that's a very, very clever idea. When it comes to additional laws about governing speech and lies, I don't know about that, because you are constitutionally protected to say whatever you want as long as it, you know, is not inciting violence. Well, I mean, there could even be arguments to be made there, right?
But if a newspaper prints a fact that isn't a fact, and they say it's a fact because it's printed, they have to retract it, they have to apologize for it, and they can be sued for libel.
But yeah, they
free
can
speech
be.
On the internet. People look at Facebook as news now. It's not just a social media platform.
Right.
It's news for 70% of people under 25.
But that is also not necessarily Facebook's responsibility. It goes back to what I was saying before. In this brave new world we're about to enter, it's going to be incumbent on every one of us to have internet media literacy and to not fall for these kinds of things. Now, as far as the photograph situation and the J-Law, you know, photos and the other celebrities, you know, I might catch some heat for this. Don't really care. I think that also goes back to, we need some PSAs. We need PSAs back in this country. Don't fucking send nudes to each other over the internet.
Yep.
You know, if you got to get your kink on, get a Polaroid camera, physically send it through a padded envelope through the mail using a fake name.
Right.
And when you get them and do whatever you're going to do with them on the other side of that transaction, and you burn the Polaroids. You have to be an idiot to send it. You're famous and you're doing that stuff. And, you know, oh, it's on my phone. It's totally fine. You know, yes, it was, you know, wrong for that guy to do that. But there also has to be some level of responsibility on the part of the, you know, quote unquote, victims of this situation.
I agree. And maybe what I'm sort of illustrating is not quite the ideal metaphor, because, for example, if somebody creates a fake political ad like that, those two that you showed, and somebody gets killed because of it, I think you have to hold the people responsibility for it. You can say, well, they should know better. They're too stupid to believe stuff they see on the internet. But
it's,
I don't know. My guess is I would at least be interested in entertaining the idea that there was a time where if you swore on television, and Bono got sued, I think, $50,000 for saying the F word when he won a Golden Globe for the score, I think, for Brave.
And I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, and I'm sure he didn't pay for it. If it was, it was a drop in the bucket for him, but the FCC held him to that. And these days, when lies are said and stuff that would get a newspaper sued up the yin yang, nothing's being done about it. And it goes at the top of the food chain as far as political leaders, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I'm just wondering if Interpol, the FCC, the laws on the books we have, they either have to be enforced stronger or something has to be done to anticipate these new things, just as streaming are the new, you know, sort of reruns. And maybe some of that kind of fear of violating those rules will get people to think twice about, am I going to do a deep fake of a presidential candidate saying something terrible that could get somebody killed or somebody's life ruined or a bomb dropped? I mean, I'm not saying that's always going to happen, but worse things have happened.
Jeff, look, I agree. I mean, it's a very sticky area for me because
for sure.
I don't agree with changing things the way they are now, but in the realm of what we're looking at in the future, as far as what's possible, right. When, you know, let's say 5 years from now, it's possible for all of us to make those Barack Obama style videos or the Lex Fridman mm-hmm. videos that we just watched on Twitter, right. You know, like just on our phone with the ease of editing a YouTube yep. short.
Yep.
Then that could be a problem because you, at that point, you don't know what's real. Like CNN right. breaking news, really? The other three people with their phones have different versions of whatever that CNN breaking news story is. You know, so that's, we're going to have to be careful, and we shouldn't go into this, you know, blindly and think there's not right. going to be problems, but we're almost not going to be able to fix those problems until we actually understand what they are. And we're not going to know what they are until they show up at our doorstep. We can be cautious, but we can't break out the pitchforks because someone, quote unquote, used AI in a movie. Right. I do want to pull over for a second because we do have a very lovely super chat.
I love it.
Argentinian superfan Petty. Thank you very much.
Hey.
Hello, Ian and Jeffrey. My internet connection must be failing because I thought I heard Ian say, maybe I'm going to say something dumb. Never in the years that I followed him has he said anything dumb. Damn internet connection.
We need to have him as a guest on the show. Come on.
Yes.
Speaking of Seacoast International.
Petty, if you ever get over to the States, I don't know if you've been here or if you've ever been to Chicago, but you need to let me know when you're coming because we're going to throw you a kick in the seat party. We're going to get
together. And Petty said he would buy me a drink. Remember last... that one time
impossible, Jeff, because so I'm gonna buy. I'm rounds are yes. on me. Sure.
I will all not right. have to buy a meal in the next 2 years.
all right, and Sajiwa popping in. Yes, you are. That background is fire. Yes, I chose this because we're talking about a hot issue, so and also it did remind me of the opening of Terminator 2, which was also relevant to yeah.
Is that from Robert Rodriguez's production company by any chance?
Oh, no. What is the name of it? I'm blanking on it.
But I know he's got this big explosion of flame.
Yes. Oh, could look man.
At it, but okay. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
How much is Argentina 1,000? Like a million? No, not quite. Not quite, Sajiwa.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, and Petty says the little heart hand love emoji. Love it.
Oh, we love him.
Renee Movie got 7,000 views on YouTube, so you have a YouTube micro-famous filmmaker here. Yes, we do, Sajiwa. Thank you, and congratulations mm-hmm. on that milestone. Sajiwa, plug your stuff. Drop a link in here as another comment, and I'll share that, because people definitely need to check out your films. And a little smiley face.
Aww. Bravo.
But yeah, I do want to pull over again because we're going to wrap up here in a few minutes. But I did have a whole slideshow prepared. Let's just think of it as a summary of what we've talked about here this evening. And so we're going to try and do this. It's selfish because I'm trying out this new technology. Jeff, you're my guinea pig and you've been great throughout this entire thing. I really appreciate hanging out and talking about this this issue with you. This kind of skeleton thing, we're assuming that this is one of the AI images. Now, frankly, it does look kind of like early AI artwork. The angles are kind of funky. Like, I don't know what is going on with this, like, snake skeleton neck man. but, it says Night Owls, and I think it's their Halloween special, so it's probably like Night Owls Will Be Right Back or something, if I remember mm-hmm. correctly. But, okay, look at, you know, Andy Serkis and, you know, Gollum from, you know, the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers, you know, this is early motion capture. So the idea is you've got this person who's doing all these expressions, but then you're mapping those expressions or on, or like using that to translate that to a digital creation. Now, if you're talking about, okay, hold on. AR work is terrible. So Gio, that's what we've been talking about for the last hour, and it is subjective. Okay. But
it is getting better, but it's still,
it is
a little funky. And,
but it can be. I mean, that Barack Obama video would not have been possible a year ago to that degree. We would have been looking at, you know, it's that meme of six fingers, right? You know, it's hard for AI to draw hands, not anymore. So we've got Gollum here. It's kind of rough, but it's all part of an evolution. Now, we look back at Toy Story from 1996. This is a few years before, you know, Lord of the Rings. You've got these characters, which at the time were very revolutionary CGI characters, but they looked, it was cutting edge technology. We look back at it now and like, oh, it looks kind of plastic and waxy. The only reason we have really nostalgia for it is because of, pay attention to Hollywood, the screenplay. But then a few years after that, you get a leap forward in the technology with Sully from Monsters, Inc. And I had a lot of artist friends back in the day who were so blown away by this movie, mostly because of what they were able to do with hair. Like you look at, yeah, I know they're toys and everything, but if you remember the human characters from Toy Story, they looked
really odd.
Abysmal. Yeah, and the hair looked almost as plastic as what's going on with Woody. Mm-hmm. But here it's very, you know, realistic for 2001 or 2002. Then we've got Polar Express, which was 2004, I believe. And this was what we were talking about earlier in the show with the eyes. People always talk about the dead eyes in these characters. And you've got Tom Hanks. And it's like, well, he looks really glum there. I don't know what happened. But
his mustache doesn't look real either.
No, it looks like he's in disguise, like he, you know, like a wax mustache he got at a joke shop. And you cut forward 6 years, and this is 6 years of release, so Cameron would have been working on this probably contemporaneously to Robert Zemeckis was doing. But then you get Avatar, and this, you know, it was for a time the biggest movie in history, because you've got the Na'vi. They are, you know, humanoid aliens. They're these, you know, 9 foot tall blue alien creatures, but you believed them and the environment they're, you know, living in on Pandora and interacting with the human actors, and the human actors kind of became these creatures. Fast forward to Avatar: The Way of Water from a couple of years ago, an even bigger leap forward to the point where you look at this eye and, yeah, you don't believe it because you know there are not 9 foot tall blue aliens, but that's pretty much the only tell. It's the fact that we don't actually have encounters with these creatures, and you've got them swimming underwater and these amazing, I did not care for the movie at all, but that went back to the screenplay. But in terms of the experience of like this sort of nature documentary feel of these characters swimming around in these ocean waters, I think it went on a little bit too long. But when I first saw it, I'm like, wow, that is pretty impressive. Now, here's where it gets personal. And one of my light experiences with AI, this is my son, Luke. This is a picture that we took in our living room. And I wanted to have like kind of a, like a, not angry, but just like an enthusiastic expression. I took this picture on my phone, and on my phone, I brought it up in my, you know, photo gallery, and I touched the screen with my finger, and it did a little bit of a shimmery dupe, and it cut out the entire background from Luke. You can see a slight halo of the yellow wall behind him, but I was able to email that picture to my email, bring that into Photoshop, take this still from Kung Fu Panda 4 of Po flying through the air and create this image. Now, cutting out Luke's head from that background would have taken 45 minutes because I'm old and slow. But I remember I tapped that picture and it turned it into a PNG. It dropped the background out completely. I was able to go back into Photoshop and do a little bit of light touching up and add a drop shadow, which, no, I didn't paint the drop shadow. It's a filter that you can put on, much like these fonts. I didn't hand draw these fonts or, you know, resize them on paper. These are all things that I found via the internet and put them together with my own, you know, compositing. Now, this is not exactly AI because I used my own intelligence to do it, but I did use AI as a tool to sense what the background elements were from this photo to take them out and then further incorporate them into to that, you know, artwork. So yeah, thank you for indulging me on that slideshow.
No, it really is a good study of the progress, particularly as we talked about the eyes, and the eyes were such a problem early on, and even through multi-million dollar productions with an A-list filmmaker like Zemeckis. By the way, I wanted to know, did you pay Katie Glidewell to use her glasses as you, you know, put those into your child's face?
No, like those Katie are Glide, his glasses.
They look like Katie Glidewell's glasses. It's like she's. I thought maybe you used her glasses for that.
No, those are Luke's glasses. But you know, we gotta get them together. Okay, this is something else I want to talk about because Sujiwa has another comment. It's very interesting. I mean, AI filmmaking will work as a unique type of animation, but not going to work for regular films. Hold my beer. So I'm going to go back here to our Twitter example here. Our friend Barcy. Let's see. Oh, this is the example of the kind of the specking out the building idea. But where is this? Here. Just mute this. But this is an example of an AI film that was put together. Now, from what I understand, I looked into this a bit. It's called Airhead. People shot this short film. And then you'll see it coming up in a second. This. This is all generated using AI. Now, Sujiwa, I don't know what you feel about this, but this is very clearly someone using AI to create a real movie. And it's not an animation. I mean, here it looks a little bit, you know, detached in the background, but this is still early days. 2 years from now, a year from now, 6 months from now, we're not going to tell the difference. At least in my not so humble opinion. Yeah. So, okay. It's very little, but it is a sign of respect for the work of Ian and his colleagues. I live in a third world country that is on fire. Yes. Patty talking about his donation. Yeah. And then James Cameron has a future in film. I think so.
Or theme park rides.
All donations help creators. Yes. I do want to say, Petty, I don't think I always acknowledge your super chats, but I always read them, but the fact that you send anything our way is greatly appreciated. It's very touching. And there's a little heart for Sujiwa. It's a black heart though. I don't know if that means like you love the AR artwork or you love to hate it. I don't know what you're I'm reading too much into it. We have new comments. Okay. That short looks like a weird type of animation. I'm going to put that thread in the link down below. If you look at it, you know, on a screen that's not this one and just like watch it for what it is, you can tell that it is, you know, it's people filmed. I'm assuming everything except for the balloon part of his head. I mean, it's real people and locations and everything. Thank you, Petty. Ian's CGI work is better than Marvel's current work. Oh, that's you're too kind. And by regular movie, I mean real life actors. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is that was incorporating, you know, real people with AI artwork. From what I understand, I was not involved in the making of that movie. But Jeff, is there anything, any stone that we have left unturned on this conversation?
The only thing I would say as sort of a wrap-up thing is, and it's kind of coming off of some of the comments from our followers here, I'm not sure we know all that it's capable of doing or how we're going to get there or how it's going to be monitored or even how advanced it can be. I do worry for artists and actors and writers that right now it's already starting to be used for, really things that are hurting their living and maybe hurting the art. And I think showing that the bottom line and the cheapskates kind of stuff is unfortunately always first and foremost with so many of the people as opposed to what Jefferson said during the Oscars about, hey, maybe you don't make a $300 million movie, maybe you make $25 million movies and good scripts, to your point, which you've been saying all night tonight. But I think in some respects, the shocking, scary, and maybe slightly exciting thing is, I don't know if we know exactly where all this is going to go yet. And I'm hoping that it goes to good places. Maybe it allows other people to make films because they aren't going to cost $20 million or $200 million. And maybe it'll be used in the right way to just create a set or a period piece that doesn't have to spend $200 million to recreate the Victorian era. But I worry that it's going to go the other way and replace actors and good writing. But we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be very exciting, though, because and very scary at the same time, because it has come so far so quick that it's almost makes your head spin. I mean, when you think the distance, the time between some of the stuff that was done in the 60s with bedknobs and broomsticks and, you know, then to Roger Rabbit and then to some of the stuff that was capable with CGI and the early works of Pixar to what they can do now. I mean, just the shot of they went with Toy Story because they knew they could make toys because they're already plastic believable in this environment because they were going to have trouble with the humans and they tried to minimize that. And they still got raked across the coals for it. And then a couple short years later, they have a full hairy monster who's the lead in Monsters, Inc. And it's like, they made it work better than the hair in Final Fantasy, which moved, but the eyes didn't.
Right. And I think, you know, you just reminded me of something. There was a story from a couple months ago that I think it was when Tyler Perry saw Sora, the AI filmmaking software.
And, right.
Beyond, I can come up with a still picture. Now they can make, you know, movies using this. And I believe that Airhead thing was made, I'm not sure if it was made with Sora or some similar type of program, but he famously stopped production on his multi tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollar production studio in Georgia, I believe, because he was building all these sound stages and sets and he saw what Sora could do. He's like, I don't need any of that now. We're redirecting our team's efforts to consider how we can use AI. And there was a big kerfuffle about it, possibly rightfully so, but you know, you might be putting some carpenters out of work, but then again, you might not. I don't know. You know, maybe they will need some kind of like a real sound stage because right now I don't know how it's going to work to have people in a completely CGI environment or an AI generated using real actors. It's still early days. So we're going to see a lot of weird stuff in the next decade until they quote unquote get it right or abandon it because it just, maybe to your point about the AI identity theft, maybe Hollywood comes out with a pact from the studio saying, hey, this could be a real killer for a lot of jobs and no one wants to see this or whatever. So we're going to outlaw it just kind of informally. I have no idea. But
and maybe they'll enforce copyright laws. You know, I mean, who knows what could happen there with public domain versus intellectual property? Who owns what? What are the measures that you can do to protect art or image or whatever that way? It's, you know, I think that's an interesting angle too that has yet to be shaken out as these things become more and more prevalent.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot to digest. And speaking of which, we're going to go back here. We're going to close it out with, a thread from Sajiwa. 170 filmmakers made 40 plus minutes movies on Oscar night, posted on YouTube. Filmmaking is super accessible now. Yes. We'll send you a link, Ian, possibly something for future podcast app, the explosion of indie filmmaking on YouTube. Yes. At least one indie filmmaker is making $100,000 on Patreon off his YouTube filmmaking. Yeah, Patreon is kind of where it's at for a lot of different types of ventures. Mm-hmm. Lots of future potential there. Joel Haver is that YouTube indie filmmaker. He's releasing one fiction feature a month this year, three out already. Yeah, I mean, no one's saying that you can't do a lot with independent filmmaking. I think what we're talking about is AI as a tool, not necessarily a replacement for, you know, these things, although I'm sure some people are going to try. But one thing that's been, I guess, kind of bandied about in terms of artificial intelligence is right now the tools are only as smart as the people who are setting them up, inputting them. We don't actually have artificial intelligence in the terms of we have a sentient being that is creating all of this new stuff. It's still just composites of the sum total of human art, ingenuity, and innovation of the past, you know, however many thousands of years. One day we may get there. And I think Elon Musk was talking about like true artificial intelligence being on the horizon in the next decade, which in that point, I might move to a mountain and not watch any media. But yeah, we're still in early days. And yeah, it's going to lead to a lot more fun conversations like this. Jeff, thank you for indulging me in my rantings and ravings and for giving me a lot to think about. I think this is, you know, I think we're very much in alignment on our opinions here. We are cautiously optimistic, and there are a lot of kind of safeguards, I think, that we would like to hopefully see put in place by people who are much smarter than us about the legalities and moralities of these kind of forthcoming situations.
Exactly. It's the human factor is evident in all parts of it, and it has yet to be written by AI or a person on what will play out.
Wasn't that a Natasha Bedingfield song, "The Rest Is Still Unwritten"?
I think so.
Staring at the blank page before you. I don't want to get copyright struck. oh, okay. Petty, a question for the last minute of the live. Sorry for the out of context. Do you recommend the 1984 Paris, Texas movie, Sorry by the Off Topic? Now, Jeff, I'm going to throw this to you because...
Yes, Harry Dean Stanton, Natasha Kinski, very well done film. Check it out. It's a small indie film that was, you know, sort of back when those things were kind of, you know, sort of impressing the world and sort of finding their footing. So do watch that one, yes.
So you're saying, yes, Wim Wenders movie. Was that Paris, Texas?
Yep.
Is that what you're referring to? Okay. Because you guys are having a conversation here in the chat before I can even read it. I love it.
Yeah. cool. I think Sajewe is going to have to buy me a cup of coffee too, or maybe both of us. Come on.
Well, he was
taking
over
the show. He's like AI. He's taking over.
Oh, but no, he is. We'll have great conversations next time he's in town. I got to get all of us together. He was in town for November showing his latest movie, Cosmic Disco Detective Renee at Facets. So I know he's working on like 35 new features, I think, right now. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to show those in Chicago. And next time you're in town, I'm getting all of us together. And Petty, we're going to give you enough notice so that you can join us as well. We'll get the entire gang together. We'll take over
a
bar.
Come visit.
Yes. Smiley face, Sajiwa. We can all do some shows on YouTube. There you go.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Jeff and Sajiwa. Yeah. Thank you, Petty. And I'm going to end this party now because we went way over, but there's a lot to talk about still. And maybe this will be part one of 97 conversations we have about AI and the movies and the arts. But Jeff York of the Establishing Shot. .org and Jeff York caricatures and pipeline artists. I've got links to all your stuff down below, folks.
Oh, yay.
Check him out. He's not only, as I mentioned, a great friend and a great film critic, but he's a tremendous artist as well. And when I say artist, I mean someone who uses, you know, pen and Bristol board, you know, the old fashioned kind of masterly techniques to bring you fantastic artwork, including my new caricature, which if you're following me on Facebook and Instagram, that's my new profile picture. So I was very honored to have you to draw.
Thank you for that. I'm impressed and honored that you're using it as that. And it seems to be popular with people. They seem to like it. I don't think I've read anybody said they just look like you yet. I was waiting for a couple of those, but no, not yet.
You broke out the ropes and chains and captured me, sir. But anyway, folks out there, if you are watching this, well, not live because we're ending the show, but if you're watching this in the future, what do you think about this whole AI debate? Are we right? Are we wrong? Are we somewhere in between? Are you afraid of AI? Do you embrace it? Are you an artist working in an industry that is affected by AI? And how are you prepared to face that future or deal with the present reality? We would love to know. So yeah, thank you. And if you did like this live stream, please like, subscribe to Kicking the Seat, ring the bell for notifications. Until next time. Oh, wait. Okay. Last comment, Petty. Ian has the team of his dreams with the colleagues with whom he performs live. Yes, that is very much true. Dream team. Yes. Not only a Michael Keaton movie from 1989, but also my reality. So thank you very much. Thanks to Jua. Thank you, Petty, for hanging out. Thank you to all of our other live listeners who popped in and out of the show and stayed with us the entire night. Love all of you. Jeff, I love you. I love movies and damn it, I'll say it, I love AI. And someone's going to clip that and play it back for me 10 years from now when I'm living out of my car. But thanks, everybody. Good night and take care.